Welcome to AUSA's Army Matter podcast. This is Family Voices with Patty Barron. It's my pleasure to have as our guest today, Amy Bouchot, someone that I just love so much. She's fantastic. She also happens to be the executive editor of military.com. Amy is an active duty Army spouse turned Army National Guard spouse. She's a fitness junkie, and as she tells us, she's a longtime fan of AUSA. So, Amy, so excited to have you on this podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Any day I get to talk to Patty Barron is a good day.
Well, definitely the same. I feel the same way. Amy, you are a military spouse with a unique career path, as well as a fascinating personal and military family story. And I'm really thrilled that you're here to share it with us. But before you do that, can you tell us about your professional life before you met your husband and how that changed when you said, I do, to that soldier?
Yeah, sure. So I got my real start in journalism after college when I moved to Washington, D.C. in 2004, which seems like, you know, a million years ago. I covered local news and I loved it, but I never covered the military with two important exceptions. First, I covered a Father's Day ceremony at the Vietnam Memorial Wall, which really taught me the importance of military families. And as you can imagine, that was very emotional. And even more life-changing for me, I accompanied the DC National Guard as an embedded reporter when they responded to Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans in 2005. After that, all I wanted to do was cover the military. So I set out to make that my job and eventually worked at a paper in the Army Times family, and I was dead set on covering the military. I thought it was super cool. But then there's this boy. Isn't that always the plot twist, right?
Yes.
For the boy. Luke and I had actually met in college, but after some long distance dating, I decided that throwing away everything to move to Joint Base Lewis-McChord to be with him was the really logical thing to do. So I put my job and journalism itself on ice, got married, had a kid, very normal military spouse stuff that we can all relate to because we've all lived it.
Yeah. And so, Amy, let's go to that for just a second because, wow, I didn't realize how much journalism you had done prior to getting married to Luke. That must have been really hard. What were you thinking? You know, not what were you thinking, but how did that transition happen for you?
Yeah. So, you know, I had a great plan because I always have a plan, Patty. You know me. I had this great plan that I was going to transition for covering what was really a federal DOD and government policy to covering Army, Navy, and Air Force issues from the base perspective out at JBLM. Because, of course, JBLM is awesome, but it also has some very nearby Navy bases, right? Mm-hmm. Kitsap, Bremerton, all that good stuff. So I was like, oh, no problem, Bob. I'll totally cover this stuff. I got the military in a bag. We're good. Well, I got out there and I realized that covering the military from a base perspective and from a family perspective and from an everyday perspective is totally different than covering policy, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know what a commissary was. I'd never heard of this stuff, right? And I was in way over my head. And I felt like I was writing stories for a very technical audience and someone was going to figure out that I didn't know the words. And so I was just really overwhelmed. You know, in retrospect, it was what we all go through when we PCS. I was experiencing a sense of loss. I was really overwhelmed with the move. I didn't know anybody. I was a new military spouse, all sorts of stuff. So I decided that really the best thing to do was just take a step back and take a break from it all.
I can kind of picture that whole transition because you're right. So many of us go through that at the very beginning. We have an idea of what we think we're going to get into, and that totally doesn't become reality. definitely not. And I know it took an awful lot for you to make that decision about your professional career and to kind of throw yourself into the military spouse life. But in 2009, something happened in your husband's unit that not only impacted him, but I would imagine the entire unit and definitely you and your family. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah. So, you know, my husband's unit was deployed to southern Afghanistan with an insurgency conflict that was much hotter than any of us really were prepared for. You know, I'm sure somebody was knowing that that would happen, right, or suspected, but certainly wasn't me. So between early August 2009 and late November 2009, actually about this time last 10 years ago, our battalion lost over 20 soldiers, including our company commander, Captain John Hallett. My husband personally experienced multiple IEDs, multiple close mortar strikes, and a brain injury that we did not even really diagnose until many years later. While he was gone, I realized that I was a little bored and wanted to go back into reporting. And at that same time, was applying for a journalism fellowship that I actually won that spring, which set me into doing some reporting on military families. So, you know, we had this huge conflict overseas, a lot of tragedy and military loss as a result impacting us stateside, right? Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, I was like, okay, let's get back to this professional train, you know? But it was through that application and that fellowship that I was actually offered a job part-time at military.com. Got my foot in the door here where I am almost 10 years later, which is a lot of years.
It sounds like a lot of years, I'm sure, but trust me, it's a blink of an eye. You know, you and I both know Lisa Hallett, someone that we admire so much, John's widow, and all of the work that she did after his death. But at the time, if I remember you telling me correctly, Luke was the executive officer of the company, and he then had to take over as the company commander right away. So were you informed of all that was going on? Did you have to take on a different role for the spouses in the unit? Just wondering, I don't think you've ever talked about that.
No, you know, so everything happened so quickly. And Luke was actually a junior captain. He had not gone to captain's career course. Mm-hmm. You know, he had just made captain before they deployed. And so his tenure as the company commander was very short lived until they promoted another guy into the spot. I mean, I didn't know my head from my tail, you know, so no, I did not take on that role. And the new guy was actually not married. If I remember correctly, the first sergeant's wife really stepped in there. But I mean, everything was so tumultuous. And, mm-hmm. you know, back in Army 2009, we also had battalion level FRSAs, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So we really were leaning on that person very heavily. And it was just, you know, it was chaos on all fronts, right? I mean, when you're living under this cloud of who's going to knock on my door and is it going to be the UPS guy, a Mormon missionary, or the guy in the uniform, mm-hmm. That's a real stressful sort of environment. And that's really what we were dealing with. You know, I had, the Army, of course, has the Army Family Covenant, right? And they gave this glorious 16 hours a month of free childcare. I used that 60 hours a month of free hourly childcare for memorial services for months. I had a block of time booked every Wednesday at the base, or, you know, at hourly. And every other Wednesday or so, we had either battalion or brigade level memorial service that my kid would go there and I would go attend, because I knew Wednesdays were for unit memorial services. We pre-scheduled.
Yeah. You know? I remember those times. It's an unbelievable time. And at end, you were also getting back into journalism and into restarting your career, which adds another level of stress to, you know, the process. But how do you think that experience might have changed your perspective as a reporter?
Yeah, I mean, really important, right? I look at the military community as if it was a small town or local news. When you cover local news, it's super, super important to live in the community you're covering, right? Because you understand it in a way that you would never understand something if you were just looking from the outside, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why one of the reasons we say the media doesn't understand the military, right? Because they haven't lived it. Mm-hmm. That deployment was trial by fire, and it taught me about the best and the worst of military life.
And what do you mean about the best and the worst? Because, you know, I'm going to try to be a journalist here and dig a little deeper.
Yeah. So, I mean, so the worst, obviously, the casualties, right? The memorial mm-hmm. services, the trauma that's associated with that. But the best is the flip side of that, right? What happens when there's tragedy? Well, it's people come together, right? It's surrounding yourselves with people who understand you and who care. It's that, I'm just getting goosebumps talking about it, right? Mm-hmm. It's that community. It's having a group of people who are moving through the same thing at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that our chaplain's wife led a Bible study for our unit, and the friendships I made through that. It's those moments where you have to rely on complete strangers, right? Mm-hmm. Because you don't have another choice. That's the best of our military life. And it's great when you get to experience that without the tragedy side, mm-hmm. right? But that's what really makes this community so special. It's the ability for us to do that with people we would otherwise never encounter in the world.
Yeah, ever. Absolutely. And you make lifelong friends, people that mm-hmm. you pick up the phone 10, 20 years later and you step right back into it. Absolutely. And that kind of leads me into the question about your changes to you personally, mm-hmm. having gone through all of that.
Yeah, you know, it was a boot camp in empathy, loss, and growth, really. You don't go through something like that without changing. I hope. I mean, I think you do change. It might be for the worse, right? Mm-hmm. But hopefully it's for the better. And I sat, you know, four rows back from the widow, you know, insert widow here, right? At countless memorial services, really. And you don't experience that without gaining an empathy for your fellow man or woman, you know, in a way that I don't think anything else could possibly teach you. Or I don't know that anything else could have taught that to me. You know, the loss and change we experience because of, and, you know, still experience every day, by the way, fundamentally changed who I am and how I experience the world. I mean, it literally changed everything.
And also I would imagine that term service and sacrifice was crystal clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how could it be clearer?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so you went on from JBLM, if I remember, just by talking to you, chatting, you know, the advanced course and then on to Fort Campbell, mm-hmm. correct? Mm-hmm. And at that point, you guys made a really big decision.
Yes, yeah, so we've been at Fort Campbell for what I'm going to go ahead and call a super long time. It was like 5 years. You know, they say that people don't really understand the impact of unaddressed TBI and PTSD until 5 to 8 years later. I can testify that that is true. My husband was simply not getting the support he needed in the Army. You know, I hesitate to say it like that because I don't feel like it's entirely the Army's fault. Mm-hmm. I think he didn't know how to ask for the support he needed. He didn't know what support he needed. I didn't know what support he needed. His commander didn't know how to provide the support he needed. This was really, if there's a failure, it was a failure that falls in everyone's laps, right? Mm-hmm. Personal failure, company failure, everybody. Okay. The best thing we could figure out to do was to cut and run to something we believed would work, which was for us, a fresh start in Alaska. And so off we went. We had never been to Alaska before, where I'm actually talking to you from today, but we packed that station wagon, drove away. My job moved with me. Luke joined the guard up here and started using his GI Bill, you know, and I can honestly say it was exactly the change that we needed.
You know, I remember when you made that decision, because I've been not only friends, but following you on Facebook, and you were fantastic in, you know, sharing that journey with all of us. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, everything that you owned was in your station wagon, literally.
Yeah. Almost, right? We did have the Army move a limited number of things in a truck that gloriously made it fairly unscathed, all things in context, right? Pretty much, you know, if we had to forego the things that we put in that truck, for the most part, you know, with a few heirloom exceptions, that would have been fine, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, get us out of here.
Well, it was fascinating to follow that, and I was so impressed with not only yours and Luke's ability to do something like that, but also the boys. And you've got two adorable boys that have been a part of your journey. How did they cope with so much transition and change?
Yeah, so, you know, my kids, I really think all military kids, by the way, are incredibly resilient. They absolutely love Alaska. I also see, though, okay, how they've been subjected to so much change reflected in how they react to change now. So, for example, both my sons love schedules and patterns, right? These kids thrive on a daily schedule. And I got to think that that's directly related to having put up with so much instability over time in sort of a big picture way, right? Mm-hmm. So now they really focus on this little day-to-day picture to find that consistency.
Yeah. And also adapting physically to a different weather pattern and the environment that comes with living in Alaska that isn't necessarily the same as living in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. How has that been going?
Well, I, you know, they're great, actually. I had to, it's 34 here today, this morning, and I had to convince my son that a jacket was appropriate, even though it is not snowing. I had to remove and hide the shorts from his drawer, or he would still be wearing them every day. So, No, you cannot wear shorts. It is 34 degrees outside. He does not seem to care. So I would say he's great, you know?
Sounds like he's made that change really nicely. and lots of camping and outdoorsy stuff, I imagine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big fans.
That's awesome. So recently, Amy, the Elizabeth Dole Foundation, in collaboration with Richard Louie, has created a documentary telling your story and that of a few others. What can you share with our audience about that experience?
Yeah. So when we were approached by Richard about doing this, I agreed because I believe that knowing how to tell a story and having the platform to do that in, to let people know that, hey, we're experiencing this too, and you're not alone, is actually, it's not like a, you get to do this. It's a responsibility. I have the platform to do this, and it is my responsibility, as, you know, in the position I'm in, to say, to stand up and be like, hey, you know, us too, guys, right? You're not doing this alone. Whatever you're battling on a caregiver front or as a veteran family, it's not just you, it's us too. And it's really just up to me to have the courage to say yes to that. So we did. We did that. We opened our world to Richard and to the cameras and to his tough questions. We were as authentic and honest as possible. We did not show perfection. I just saw a preview of our portion of the documentary, and I felt like I could wear some shorts that fit me better. Let's put it that way. There was no perfection involved. Okay. It was exhausting, but I mean, in other ways too, obviously, but that one definitely came to mind while watching it. It's exhausting. But I'm hoping, if nothing else, it helps someone who just needs to hear that they aren't the only people experiencing the challenges of traumatic brain injury, of PTS or PTSD, you know, of caregiving. It's us too, guys.
You know, I can't even imagine what it's like to let someone into your home and see it all. I mean, literally see it all, which is, from what you say, sounds like is what they did. But let me ask you, how did you convince Luke and the boys that this was something that was going to be okay to do? And how did they kind of respond to the actual filming of it all?
Yeah. So Luke and I are on the same page about this, fortunately, that this is, you know, this is our responsibility to get to, you know, do our best to help ourselves and then share that journey with others, that we're people of faith. And we think that's a God-given gift to be able to do that. So it's our job to say yes. My kids are, you know, like all kids, I think, thrilled with attention from other people. So they were just delighted. And you know, the documentary actually really focuses on them in a lot of ways. They did a lot of interviewing with, the camera where I wasn't in the room, which was a little nerve wracking. So that was a trust exercise for me that they wouldn't, you know, embarrass me. So, I'm proud to say that they did not embarrass me, and they are hilarious. It's like watching Abbott and Costello. They took it well, you know, but those kids, they just kind of do what you say, right? Like, hey, they think this is normal to have cameras in the house now. Oh yeah, there's our friends. They're taking your video.
That is amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. And I know that I definitely want to be able to watch it, as I'm sure many of our audience members. So when can we tune in?
Yeah. So right now the documentary is going to be premiered in two waves, is my understanding. First, they're showing it at the Kennedy Center November 18th in a limited showing. And then in March, they're planning a bigger premiere event and then working on ways for a broader audience. So my best answer, unfortunately, is stay tuned for more. We'll definitely be sharing it once it's shareable.
And on our end, we will definitely share any information you provide us so that people will know how to be able to access it, because it just promises to be amazing. And the fact that I know you personally is going to be even more impactful, I think.
they focused, just as a side, it's not just us in this documentary. They focused on 6 caregiver families. And so we really are going to have the chance to have a view into this caregiving for veterans in from a variety of perspectives, not just mine. And so, and not just my kids. So I think that's a real treat. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. You know, the work that the Elizabeth Dole Foundation is doing in bringing the issue of caregiving into focus has been amazing. As you know, I think you and I were both at the event just, it's been a couple of weeks now, where they honored Michelle Obama, who came and accepted mm-hmm. the award, which was wow. And the growth that they've had over maybe about, 10 years, maybe not even that long. But I think what it does is it speaks to this hidden hero, and that's their term, of folks that are out there doing what they need to do to make sure that their loved ones and their family unit can stay as intact and as positive and healthy as possible given the circumstances. So definitely my yeah. hat is off to this community of hidden heroes. Absolutely.
Yeah, they're definitely doing some incredible things over there.
Yeah. So, Amy, you've been a fantastic guest, as I knew that you would be, with all your knowledge and experience. Girl, I could have talked to you for hours. And we definitely want you to come back. Do you have any last thoughts before we close?
Yeah, 2 things. I want to touch back on a theme that we've sort of talked about. If you're experiencing the burden of service, that things that make you think you're crazy, or that you're the only family in the world that has to navigate this emotional burden, you know, you're not. We're out here. We're all doing this together. Others are out here too. We are unique in our American culture, but we are not unique in the world. There's a whole bunch of us. And so just, you know, you're not alone. And that, I think that means something. And then next, just a quick thanks to you, Patty, for the incredible resource you guys provide through AUSA. The reason you're so impactful is that you approach everything with authenticity and grace, and that stuff matters. So thank you.
Thank you, Amy. You don't go through this life without realizing that we can't do it alone. And certainly the connections that are made and the friendships that are made are a treasure. And I think that we both feel that very, very strongly. So thanks for that. We've come to the end of our podcast episode. To all our listeners, thank you for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes or everywhere that podcasts are found. Keep it locked here for all Army Matters and for next week's episode featuring Army thought leaders. I am Patty Barron with Family Voices. As always, family strong, Army strong.